Hey, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.net. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley. Happy December.
Woo!
I am excited to celebrate this most festive of months with Mr. Adam Riske.
Happy Honda Days, everybody.
We're going to be talking tonight about some of our favorite holiday movies. Is that how we worded it?
Yes, yeah, and I'm excited because this is probably going to be background music for when somebody puts up lights on their tree.
Oh, absolutely.
Or, like, they're just inviting people over and, like, they're waiting. They're doing the final prep.
Right, right, right.
While people
waiting
come over
for the
and
guests
everything.
To come. They just they're, have the podcast on in the background.
They're kindling the fire. And then they're just like, oh, hey, by the way, I was just casually listening to this podcast I've been listening to for 5 years.
Yeah, yeah.
But you should really check it out. And then we get more fans and the bounty and the F This Movie family
oh
grows.
Oh, gosh. It is the spirit of giving.
Yes, it is.
So we are going to be talking about holiday movies as we enter December. The rest of the month is probably going to be devoted to a lot of like year-end stuff, right? Can you believe the year is over already?
I'm kind of glad a little bit. I mean, like, it's funny because I remember you were mentioning in the show last week your top 10 list, and you kind of took like an early stab at like, okay, well, what would be in my top 10 list? And John said that he would have like 15 movies. I could easily have 15 movies at this point too. But it's weird because there's only like maybe five that I'm passionate about, but there's like five that I'm like, oh yeah, objectively that's like a 4-star movie, but I don't like love.
Yeah,
that movie.
I feel like that's the bottom half of my list is going to be those where like, it's like, I recognize this is good.
Exactly. Like Inside Out, I really, really respect and admire.
Yeah.
But I don't love it like I love Ratatouille or Finding Nemo or like Mad Max Fury Road. I love, but like I don't love. So it's weird. It's that whole like degree of love at the end of the year.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, like, you got Hateful Eight coming up. You got Star Wars coming up. I got the Business Awards 2015 coming up.
We got the Road Chip.
The Road Chip. Daddy's
coming
Home.
Up. Yeah. A lot of other Chip movies too. Chip
Break.
And Dip. Chip on My Chest, I believe.
Chip on a Wire.
One Chip on a Wire. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Piece of Chip.
Have you seen any of those Alvin and the Chipmunk movies?
I have not, and yet my 7-year-old soon to, by the time this podcast comes out, he will be 7.
Wow.
My 7-year-old son really wants to see the Road Chip. Like every time we see the trailer when we go to the movies, he says, I want to see that. And I have the exact opposite reaction because I think it looks like such garbage, even by kids' movie standards.
Yeah, I had that experience when I saw The Good Dinosaur and they had all those kid movie trailers and it was like The Angry Birds and I wanted to run up the stairs and then jump down them.
It's all of the worst things about kids' movies, you know? Like, and they make enough that are good these days that you don't have to do all the like wisecracks and the who let the dogs out and all that, but and yet there are enough of them that still do.
And also, if we get past December, that means the closer we are to Norm of the North. Did you see that one?
Nope.
It's like a Lionsgate animation movie, so you
those
know
are
it's
always
like
good.
Really good.
Yeah.
It's the Un Gallo con Muchos Huevos of 2016. but it's the like a polar bear, and he's like living in New York, and he's trying to fit in.
That sounds really good.
It's a classic pull out of water movie.
That sounds terrific.
It does.
And I can't wait to see it.
I can't either.
So we're going to be talking about some of our favorite holiday movies later in the show. But first, we will begin the way we always do. I will ask you, Adam Riske, have you seen anything good lately? This is the new Have You Seen Anything Good Lately theme song.
You're welcome, everybody.
It's actually a tiny bear with antlers and a Santa hat that Adam Riske brought as a prop.
Yeah.
It dances and plays the Benny Hill theme.
I decided to bring props this time.
That's true. He's wearing a Santa hat, everyone. This is not just theater of the mind bullshit.
Because this is where we give props to the movies that are released right now.
There's also a Lotka Larry on the table here.
He will be played later, but he is in the voice of Jerry Stiller, and it is the most Jewish fucking thing that I could find.
Second most, because...
Oh, I forgot. So the most Jewish thing is a bear that I got at Bed Bath & Beyond, and his name, he sings the dreidel song. And I brought him because us Jews are underrepresented in holiday movies. So I figured he would probably, you know, kind of fill the quota for the show. And I name him the Bear Jew because he's dressed in a tallis and a yarmulke. And he is very Jewish.
And he carries a baseball bat that he bashes in the heads of Nazis.
He does. And if you open up the little Star of David pouch, Patrick, there's a present in there for you.
This seems like a trick. And I'm opening the pouch, and inside is a little dreidel. Outstanding.
So Patrick has been ceremonially bar mitzvahed.
Yay! I'm a man.
There you go.
Yay!
There you go.
Thanks, Bear Jew. Thanks for not killing me. And thanks for making the Green Inferno, you asshole bear.
He is totally into turtle murder. So odd for a bear, but like he's really into animal cruelty and horror in his horror. Yeah. So I don't know. Go figure. So all right, what have I seen lately? I saw a bunch of stuff because I had time off because of Thanksgiving holiday weekend.
It's kind of nice.
It was nice. So I drove to the theater once to almost see Victor Frankenstein, and then it did a U-turn and did something else.
That's, I think you made the right call.
I know, I'm really excited.
I think
about
I'm okay if I never see. I put that in the category as Dracula 2000 and that Aaron Eckhart thing. Yeah. I Frankenstein, to me, it's all the same.
The cast taunts me because I'm just like, I kind of like James McAvoy.
I really like James McAvoy, but that looks like the Sherlock Holmes of horror movies.
Yeah, so I avoided that, but instead I saw Brooklyn.
Okay.
And Brooklyn, it was kind of weird because it had like a 90, and I don't read into the tomato meter, but it was like 99.
Thermometer. It's pronounced thermometer.
Thermometer. ketchup. So like, it got like a 99%.
Yeah.
Which is basically like, if you don't like this movie, then you are a pod person.
You're the 1%.
You're the 1%. So I watched it, and it is not bad at all. It's fine. It's totally like, it's one of those movies where the lead performance is charming and it's like a sweet movie and it's very enjoyable as it goes along, but there is absolutely nothing special about it that I will remember a year from now. So I don't know. I mean, like I got into like a bit of a streak of those movies lately. Like I watched Brooklyn and I watched Trumbo, and Trumbo's like got like a really good Bryan Cranston performance, but it's just like, okay, I already know this story, but I needed something to see with my parents that's kind of safe. So,
do you feel like these movies would be better served if they were spread out throughout the year? Like, if a Trumbo came out in March, do you feel like you would respond better to it than when every movie is Trumbo in November and December?
Yeah. I mean, like, I can't even imagine, like, you with watching, like, a screener after screener type of thing where you get it, you know, you could watch, like, three Trumbos in a night.
And I do, basically.
Yeah.
I'm up to three Trumbos
a day. Because
you're
not a Dumbo, so you're watching Trumbo. You gotta
R.I.P.
keep, you gotta
Gene
keep
Shelley.
That up. You gotta keep that up. I agree with everybody on that. So Brooklyn and Trumbo are kind of in the same bubble where it's like these very competent indie movies that are very well acted, and things that I will not remember. They are the whatchamacallits, like the In the Bedrooms and Gosford Parks of 2015.
This is what I was experiencing at the end of last year, and a little bit this year, although I'm not so deep into it yet, but like, I was watching all these movies that people were losing their shit over, and I'm just like, yeah, it's good, it's fine.
Yeah.
I'm not falling in love with it, you know, so whatever.
So I saw those.
All right.
And then I'll talk briefly about a couple other two because I'm reviewing them, and they're going to be up on the site by the time this show is on.
Yeah.
So, Check those out. The first one is The Good Dinosaur, which they should call The Not-So-Good Dinosaur, because The Good Dinosaur is not good. The Good Dinosaur is boring as shit.
Oh, boy.
And did you see it?
No.
By any chance? Okay.
I was supposed to take my kids, and I
prefer
to disappoint them.
Oh, it's got to be cool to have that power.
Oh, for sure.
It's nice.
I still haven't gotten over not going to see Ghostbusters in 1984. So
yeah, I didn't get over not seeing Aladdin in 92.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, these are the things that we remember.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
It's what drives us.
Exactly. Yeah, I remember there was one time I was at a Burger King, and it was right around the time Aladdin came out, and this kid was talking to his dad at an adjacent table, and he's just like, "Hey, are we going to go see Aladdin today?" And then the dad was like, "Of course we're going to go see Aladdin today because I love you." And then I just looked at, my mom, and I'm just like, "You love me like a dollar theater. You mean like you will take me in 10 months when this comes to the dollar show." So, so The Good Dinosaur was, it was a lot like Dinosaur, actually.
Oh,
do you remember
dear.
Dinosaur?
I do.
Where, like, the animation is so photorealistic in the background, like the water ripples off of the skin of the dinosaurs. It's just beautiful. It's like breaking ground, new ground in animation, where I'm convinced it's not even animation. Like, I think they just shot real shit and then threw some cartoons in the real shit. But the movie is just like, it's really kind of mean-spirited and dark, and
weird.
It's like Don Bluthy a little bit in that sense, which is not what Pixar usually is.
Right.
I mean, like, would it fucking kill them to put like a song in there or like some comic relief or something like that? I mean, like, it was just
like a bing bong. A bing bong.
Yeah, it was just like despairing and blah. And like the lead character, Arlo, who's this, like, he's not a brontosaurus, but he is a brontosaurus. He's like afraid of everything, and you just feel bad for him. And he's just like, he's kind of like a big dino pussy, but he's just like, he's like one of those kids that you see on
one
playground.
One of my favorite James Bond movies, by the way. He's Dino Pussy.
I want to see Dino Pussy. Who would sing the theme song to Dino Pussy?
Dino Pussy!
B-52s.
Yeah, Fred Schneider.
The BC-52s.
I just turned into a Flintstones sketch.
Yeah.
With the BC-52s.
Here comes a pussy. It's as big as a whale, and it's about to set sail.
Dino pussy.
He's afraid of every leaf and branch.
All right, sorry.
Such a big pussy. So whatever. The Good Dinosaur's. Nah, it was such a disappointment. I saw it.
Is this the first time that Pixar has done two movies in a year? I mean, I know this one's been like.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, it got.
They've had it for so long that I think they were just like, all right, let's just put it out. This can't be our only movie in a year.
Yeah, I read on IMDb that it was the first time that they did a two movie in a year.
It's almost like they're burning it off. Like,
I think
well, we got to put it out. So here you go.
Yeah, I put it in the review. It just seems like something they want to like get behind them.
Right.
Which is fine, because they're going to just sequelize everything now.
Yeah, right. Finding Dory is next.
I don't need that.
And then Toy Story 4?
I don't need that either.
No, I'm good.
Yeah, whatever. And then, but the big thing I'm excited about is Creed.
Yeah.
I really loved Creed. Did you see Creed yet?
I haven't.
Okay, so it's, I can easily say without like hyperbole, it's the best Rocky movie since the original.
Wow.
It's super good. It's really well acted. It's not something that, like I saw it twice and like, I'm not enjoying it like with beer goggles, like I do with Furious 7, where like I saw Furious 7 like three times in the theaters, even though I knew it was not good. But I have such love for the Rocky series that it was just really cool to see, like, Ryan Coogler, of all people, really just do such a good job of kind of honoring the traditions of the series, but also kind of breathing some life into it.
All right.
And it was neat, and I never would have thought that with, like, the director of Fruitvale Station. I would have thought, like, it would have been another sad bastard movie, Fruitvale Station, but it's not. I mean, it's just like really gets you pumped up, and the score is probably my, if not It Follows, it's probably my favorite score of the year. It's just really super well done. It's very Bill Conti-ish, but it's like a different guy doing it. So, no, if you haven't seen Creed, you should totally see Creed.
I will. I'm so taken aback by this, honestly, because when it was sort of announced, it was like Fruitvale Station had come out and Ryan Coogler was hot all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, what I want to do next is a movie about Apollo Creed's kid.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's what you're going to do with your currency that you've earned from this movie as the hot young indie director? Like, this seems like a bad idea, mm-hmm. but apparently it's not.
Yeah, it's interesting because I heard, did you ever hear like that thing where there's like the NYU type of director or the USC type of director?
Maybe.
Okay, so it's like you're an indie director, right? And if you want to make personal movies, you go to NYU. But if you want to make like big blockbusters, you go to USC.
Makes sense.
So, yeah, it seems like this was kind of like that movie where he decides which way he wants to go. And it's kind of cool to see, whereas like a Colin Trevorrow goes to USC routes, Ryan Coogler is still going to the NYU route. But he's able to do that within the confines of like a franchise.
Right.
It's kind of it's just really neat. But the thing that I feel like people are overlooking is so much of the groundwork of why this movie is successful was laid in Rocky Balboa,
really,
in the 2006 one, because like there's so much pickup from that movie.
Okay.
Of like,
should I rewatch that before I go see Creed?
I would think so. Okay. Yeah, like especially if you haven't seen it since it was first released.
I haven't.
Yeah, you should watch it again. And Creed is better than Rocky Balboa, but there's so much that I think it owes to that movie,
okay.
In terms of why it is successful. Because, but the one thing that I was annoyed about with the movie is, all right, Stallone is really good in the movie.
That's what I hear.
It's a really like subtle, interesting performance, but he's almost not playing Rocky anymore, because Rocky in like Rocky V was like,
I'm gonna go for it.
Yeah, he was punch drunk basically.
Right.
And now, apparently, like, time cures that.
Sure, it does.
Which I don't think is true.
No, I'm pretty sure it does.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, I'm an asshole. But he seems smarter than he's ever been.
Oh, all right.
So, that was kind of, like, took me back a little bit. And that's the only... That would be, like, if I had one complaint about the movie, that would be it. Where it's just, like...
You feel like Rocky should be dumber?
I do. I feel like Rocky should be dumber. Like, he always has a lot of, like, street wisdom,
sure.
But like this time I could definitely see him like successfully running Adrian's, like the restaurant that he was running, whereas
sure.
Before I felt like there's somebody behind the scenes kind of like helping him
out.
He was out there just to kind of schmooze and shake hands and like be the face of the restaurant. Now he's like doing like all the operations instead of it, and I'm just like, this is like more intricate than Burnt. By the way, I saw Burnt.
By the way, Burnt came out.
Yeah. And
Burnt is a movie.
I almost wanted to, it was during Scary Movie Month, but I almost wanted to write a review just to be like, you burnt.
Yeah, for sure.
That would have been it. And that could have been my pull quote that would have been on the poster.
For sure.
Yeah. So,
instead, your pull quote for Creed is like, Creed is a knockout. Go 12 rounds with Creed.
Exactly.
Did you go see Dangerous Men last night?
I did.
And?
Where do I start? I was one of about 15 people in the movie, in the theater. It was in the little theater at the Music Box.
Sounds about right.
And I would say of the 15, 5 of us got it.
Okay.
And 5 of us did not get it.
Okay.
And I was one that did not get it.
Okay.
And I really
that
like...
That leaves 3 people left over. Or no, 5 people left over.
They were deciding.
Oh, sure.
We talked in the lobby. And they said, I thought I was watching Clue. I don't know. It breaks my heart to talk about this movie. It's almost because I almost avoided it. Like, I wasn't going to bring it up.
Okay.
If you didn't bring it up. Because I really hated it. I thought it was... it's something where... it made me think, why does something like Miami Connection work so well for me,
yeah,
but something like Dangerous Men doesn't? And
Miami Connection is sweet and sincere and hopeful.
Yeah.
And Dangerous Men is like sleazy and mean-spirited.
It wasn't even that. It was just kind of like, I felt like the movie was so poorly made.
It is.
Which, it's by far the most poorly made movie that I've seen.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, I've never seen a movie that's worse put together.
Yeah.
Worse put together.
Yeah.
I felt like it was like a Birdemic Sharknado type of joke. Like, I felt like they were playing a joke, like a hipster joke, and it wasn't coming from any point of sincerity anymore. Like, I didn't feel like...
filmmakers, you think?
Yeah, I felt like...
no.
See, okay, I understand this John Rad guy is, like, kind of just, like, the YK Kim
that
up
dude
to Miami Connection.
Means it 100%.
I didn't get that. I felt like he was... I understand that this was put together over 20 years, and, like, there are scenes that follow one another where, like... One, you'll see a calendar that says, like, 1995, December 1995, but it comes right after a scene that was clearly made in, like, 1985.
Yeah.
And I want to get behind this movie. I want to enjoy it ironically. I want to enjoy this unironically, just, like, to laugh at it, just to have a good time. But
I don't think you have to enjoy it.
I don't know what it was.
I think it exists to be fascinated by.
Yeah, I mean, I was fascinated with it for like 15 minutes.
Sure.
And then like it just really kind of wore out its welcome.
Sure.
And I was really, if I wasn't going to talk to you about it, I probably would have left.
Sure.
I felt like I had to really kind of force myself to stick through it.
I enjoyed it on the level that like it violates every rule of cinema.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It's
like, what is this? The editing, there will be just a quick cutaway to something.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's an artistic choice. It's almost like a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Because you keep waiting for that to come back or pay off, but it doesn't.
Yeah.
It loses interest in its main storyline about halfway through. And
it does.
It's because they picked up filming a decade later. But like at a certain point, it just stops being about the thing that it's about and becomes about something totally different.
Yeah, my favorite joke in the movie is in the end credits where it says special thanks to the people who helped make this movie possible, and the director only lists himself.
See, this is... I totally understand not enjoying it, and no part of me is saying that you are wrong, because I won't say that like I loved it. I'm so fascinated by it, and I just think it's something weirdly special in a bad way.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
It's something where I don't know what it was. Maybe I was just in a mood or something like that. Like, I don't want to dissuade anybody from seeing it or like trump your review in any way. But it just personally just didn't do anything for me.
No, yeah. No. All right. Yeah. Listen, I get it. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay. I'm catching up on a lot of movies.
Mm-hmm.
I finally saw Spotlight.
Yeah.
Which is very good.
Yeah, it is.
Is it still your favorite movie of the year, or did Creed surpass it?
I feel like I'm just going to have to eventually just pick a favorite movie of the year, and I can't keep changing it.
Sure. Well, you can up until you have to pick.
Sure, true. But yeah. That is the true. but I think still Spotlight, but it's weird because that's a movie that, like, it's like Selma. I, like, respect the shit out of it and like it a lot, but, like, I'm never going to want to be like, hey, let's put on Spotlight.
Sure. Understandable.
So, can that be a number one movie? I don't know.
Anything can be a number one movie.
Yeah.
It's whatever criteria you use to say, like, I think this is my favorite thing or the best thing I saw this year.
Yeah
really, really good. Gets a lot of things right about journalism, makes you appreciate journalism and lament the current state that we are in today, because these people were, you know, heroes in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
I almost didn't want it to be over. I got a sense that like it was winding down, but I felt like, hey, I could keep watching these people do their jobs for another 2 hours, you know, whether it's about this particular case. Obviously that was, you know, very interesting and horrible and tragic, but even if it was like, okay, we're on to the next case,
well,
Spotlight 2.
It still feels like they just kind of barely cracked the surface.
Oh,
like,
for sure,
by
which the movie acknowledges
get,
with that thing at the end credits.
Yeah, like, exactly.
But yeah, very, very well done.
Yes, yes, it's very good. I'm glad that you liked it.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
I saw Steve Jobs,
mm-hmm.
which I also liked.
Yes.
I enjoyed that. I didn't know anything about it going. I mean, I knew it was about Steve Jobs.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know what the structure was.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until I don't think this is a spoiler. If you don't want what the structure of Steve Jobs spoiled for you, I guess tune out. It's essentially told in three acts, and each of the acts is leading up to him going on stage to do like a
product launch.
A product launch,
yeah.
Right. Over the course of, it's I guess only 2 decades, right? Because one's the 80s and two are the 90s. Oh, 84
to 98. 84, yeah. 88, and 98. Yeah.
So three product launches. And I didn't know that. So about a half an hour in, I was like, this is still all the same scene. I mean, it's not one take or anything like that, but it's like, this is still all taking place prior to the product launch, because I don't know what I was expecting, but it wasn't that. So I thought that was a really interesting structure. I thought the performances were good. Seth Rogen, I feel like, doesn't have anything to do. Michael Fassbender is obviously the whole show.
Yeah.
And Aaron Sorkin writes really good dialogue. I'm somebody who did not like The Newsroom at all.
I watched it for a few episodes and then gave up on it.
It infuriated me.
Yeah.
But when Aaron Sorkin is good, he's really good, and it makes you wish that other writers would at least attempt to copy him. I don't mean what he does, but just how quickly the language moves in his movies or in his scripts, and how much of a focus he puts on dialogue. Last night I was watching My Man Godfrey, and I like tweeted out because I had seen both of these movies in a week, and they're just pure dialogue, and they move really fast, and they're so much more compelling than any fucking dinosaur in Jurassic World or whatever. And it's like, gosh, I wish dialogue wasn't a lost art. So the dialogue in Steve Jobs is really great. I like a lot of what it has to say. Kate Winslet, I feel like the movie was shot out of order, because later in the film she has a much heavier accent than she does early on.
I didn't notice that.
And I feel like maybe they shot the last stuff first, and then as they continued shooting, she lost the accent. I like the job that Danny Boyle did.
Mm-hmm.
Danny Boyle sometimes, for me, over directs a little bit.
He's like that pretty often for
me. I mean, he's like real manic.
Yeah, it's almost feels more like an Aaron Sorkin movie than a Danny Boyle movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which
is really good if you're a fan of that type of Social Network vibe.
Well, what I think he does that's impressive is that he does give it an energy and sort of an immediacy, and he keeps it moving, and so you don't even really notice that you're basically just backstage for 2 hours listening to people talk in hallways. And so he does that without pushing it too far to where it's like, look at me, I'm style, and going crazy with like the cuts. The first half hour of 127 hours, I was like, oh, I don't like this. And then it got better. But like, he was just overdoing it. And he doesn't overdo it. I think he moderates it really well. And I like, you know, as much as I mixed a lot of times on his movies, I like that he rarely does the same thing. He keeps trying different kinds of movies.
That's true. Yeah, it's something that I never really thought about with Danny Boyle. But you're absolutely right. I have a lot of thoughts on Steve Jobs. I think it's a movie that deserved a bigger audience. I understand that, like, it came out at a time where there was like six other Steve Jobs type movies.
Right, right, right.
So I mean, like, when I say that, I mean like dramas for adults. So it didn't break out of the pack, but it was funny because it's a movie that I sometimes have like really just simple summations or assessments of movies, and that was one of those movies where I just thought, I can't understand how people can memorize that much dialogue.
Yeah,
like it really shows you how good actors are and how hard of a job that can be sometimes, because that script must have been like 200 pages.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's all dialogue. It's wall-to-wall dialogue. And the thing that I also liked about it, which was coming from like a business background, it really captures what it's like to work for an asshole. And like, it's really, you have to understand you get to a point when you're working for an asshole where you're like, is this person really smart or are they just an asshole?
Right.
And if that person is not really, really smart to back up them being an asshole, then they are insufferable to work for. But whereas somebody with Steve Jobs, he needed to be that because a lot of the people who were his developers were kind of nicer people and softer people than he was. So they might have had all the skills, but to push the innovation.
Right.
And to get to do like the scheming and kind of backroom manipulation that Apple needed to get to where Apple was, he needed to do all of that. And it's kind of interesting because it portrays how that type of persona can be like a necessary evil in business. So that was something that I thought was really kind of fascinating about the movie.
Yeah, definitely. I really liked it. I was surprised at how engaging it was the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
When I finished it, I listened to the Slash Filmcast review, and sometimes they're a little bit mixed for me when I do listen. But yeah, they had a really interesting conversation about the movie because one of the guys was very much on the side of like, and it's something that's come up on that show before. One guy was very much on the side of like, you have a responsibility to the truth, and it's not fair that they paint Steve Jobs as just an asshole.
Yeah.
And the other one was saying, no, this movie isn't actually about Steve Jobs, the man. It's about something bigger. And there's kind of this debate about what a biopic should be. And it was a really interesting conversation. So if you see the movie and you like it, or you're just interested in hearing that discussion, you should check that episode out.
It was a good episode. I listened to that one.
Yeah, too. Yeah.
Yeah. It was. Sometimes they have a tendency to get kind of up their own butts, I think, like with some of their, yeah, but with some of their conversations where you just don't even know what they're talking about anymore because it's so specific.
Right, right, right.
And I felt like they got into that a little bit with this, like Dave Chen. I really like Dave Chen, but like I felt like his assessment of Steve Jobs was a little bit like, what are you talking about anymore?
Sure.
But no, that was a really good episode. The Spectre episode is really funny too. Did you listen to
Not
that
as
one?
Funny as ours.
Never,
yes,
never,
I did listen
never,
to it.
Never as funny as ours, but it was a funny episode.
Yeah, it absolutely was. I mean, yeah, it got very much into like, it was almost like one of those videos, like Everything Wrong With or whatever, because it gets very much into the specifics of like, and why is this? And why? Which is fine. You know, it's not always how I watch movies.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I had one more thing that I wanted to say about Steve Jobs. Oh, I haven't watched it yet, but I put the Ashton Kutcher Jobs into my Netflix queue because it's on Netflix Instant, because now I want to watch it just to see like a totally different approach.
Yeah,
because I'm pretty convinced, I think based partly on what JB has said and then based partly on just the trailer that I remember, that their approach is much more kind of the Straight out of Compton, like, then this happens, then this happens, then this happens, then he invents the iPhone, then this happened. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Which Steve Jobs, the Danny Boyle movie, is not about that at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's really not about, there are a few hints of it near the end, and that's the stuff for me that doesn't work. But
yeah,
it would be a spoiler, I guess, to talk about that.
Yeah, they kind of go in Steve Jobs with the approach like the Aviator does, where it's like, okay, what's the crux of his career? Like, what's the big important part of his career that informs all of the rest of his endeavors?
And trying to understand about something about his character instead of just recounting things that he did, you know, which is just not interesting necessarily. I don't know.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, Straight Outta Compton is like a super entertaining movie, but that's one of my big problems with that movie is that it doesn't really try to understand beyond the first like half hour, 45 minutes, anything about NWA and their impact on the culture. It's just like, and then Dr. Dre met Snoop Dogg and they wrote.
Yeah. And biopics like,
then he wrote, Ice Cube wrote Friday. Like, that's the most egregious scene in that movie to me.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a bad scene. Now, Trumbo did a bit of that, too. Like, one thing that I hate in biopics is when there's somebody that they have to introduce and they have to say who it is, but it's such, like, a leaden moment where they're just like,
right,
my name is Kirk Douglas.
It's awful.
My name is Otto Preminger. It's just like, oh, God.
It's the worst.
Can you not do that, please?
It's the worst, yeah. Couple more that I'll talk about. I saw Room.
Okay.
Which you wrote a review for at ifthismovie.net.
Yeah.
I pretty much agree with your assessment.
Okay.
This is a very good movie that I probably never want to see again.
Yeah. Did you know much about it before you
nothing.
Watched it?
Okay. Well, I literally knew nothing.
That's good. That's good.
Brie Larson is very good.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a smart choice to tell it from the kid's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
There were a few moments where I was like, oh, we seem to have just kind of glossed over this hugely significant event. And then I had to take a step back and say, oh, but we're seeing it through the kid's eyes. And so it's still playing fair. I'm guessing you know what I'm referring to.
Yeah.
And so there were moments, we were watching a screener, my wife and I, and there were moments where each of us were turning to each other saying, like, I don't think I can watch this. Like, should we turn this off? Should we come back to this? I got to leave the room. Like, I was really having a hard time with it.
Mm.
That went away after a little while, and it got a little easier. But I don't know. That's one of those things, like you were talking about, one of these objectively good movies that, like, so do I put this in my top 10? Because...
Yeah.
It's very good. It's very moving at times. Put together really well. Good score, like you were saying with Creed. Lot of things I liked about it.
Oh, the score bugged me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I liked the score.
I felt like it underscored certain moments that shouldn't have had a score.
Okay.
Like, there's a couple of scenes where there's one in the middle and one at the end. I won't go into it, but like, where I was like, oh, you should not have played music because it was tipping its hand, I felt like, a little bit too much. But that's just my personal
taste. Did you notice
that
every second of Dangerous Men had a score?
Yes. Yeah, that was maybe one of my favorite things about the movie.
He had some music that he wrote that he's like, I'm putting it all in, and
it's
the,
like,
entire movie is scored.
And it's an 80-minute movie, and it's not like he wrote 80 minutes of score. No, it's like he wrote 6 minutes of score.
Yeah, maybe.
And it's just on a loop. And it doesn't go with the movie at all.
No.
It doesn't go with the action.
It's almost always at odds with what is happening on screen.
Yeah, but I mean, some of it's for the score, I think, is like actually... If I listen to it on its own, one of the more competent things in the movie. Yeah.
Did you feel like we're talking about Dangerous Men again? Did you feel like the girl whose name I can't remember, Miss 45?
Yeah.
She's a bad actress, like everyone in the movie is bad.
Yeah.
But did you still feel like there was something weirdly compelling and/or watchable about her?
Oh, absolutely.
So did
I. She was definitely the most charismatic person in the cast.
Yeah, it was like, I'm okay watching you, even though you have very little acting ability.
Yeah, I really like the scene where she gets a prostitute to go back to her place with her, and they're talking about...
Bonkers.
She wants to be... So Miss 45 wants to be a prostitute too, but she, like, recounts all of the danger of this woman's life. Like, it's like one of those things where it's like, oh, it's Friday night, but I'm going to tell somebody about all the shit they got to do on Monday. It's like one of those moments where it's just like, why'd you even do that? I would feel terrible.
No, it's such a weird movie.
Yeah.
All right, two more that I will talk about quickly because we're running very long on this section, but there's a lot of stuff out. Mm-hmm. I saw The Look of Silence.
Have you seen that again?
It's a documentary.
Oh, is that the Oppenheimer?
So it's Joshua Oppenheimer's kind of follow-up to The Act of Killing.
How was that?
Good.
Okay.
Good. Very well done. I really loved The Act of Killing as much as one can love a movie like that. I mean, I loved kind of what it said about historical events, but part of what I loved about it was the way it approached the... for as douchey as this sounds, the cinematic form that he found a way into this crazy story by having these reenactments. That was so fascinating. I'm watching it like, I've never seen a movie like this before. Look of Silence is a much more straightforward. It gets rid of all that. So it's like, I don't want to compare the two, but I mean, I think Act of Killing is like such a brilliant, audacious, crazy movie. And this is like just a really good documentary, very sad. Whereas Act of Killing kind of followed these Indonesian military men who were responsible for the slaughter of, you know, upwards of 1 million people.
Mm-hmm.
This is more kind of told from the victim's perspective. It follows this guy who's an optometrist whose brother was one of the people murdered. And he's kind of just trying to get at the truth of, like, what happened. And so he has these appointments... You know, he's checking people's eyes, and then brings it up. Like, so you were one of these people that did this, right? Mm-hmm. And most of the men have no problem talking about it. And so it's just about how you live with... I mean, I was watching it just so fascinated by this idea that, like, the people who were affected by this still live there.
Yeah.
And so do the people who did it. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, that's
if the Jews and the Nazis all still lived in Germany together today, it's like, how the fuck does this work?
Right.
It's monstrous. And so the movie is again, very good, very moving. It didn't hit me quite the same way that The Act of Killing did. But if you're a documentary fan or if you were a fan of that movie, I recommend it as kind of a follow-up. And then the last movie I'll talk about is not a movie from this year. And it's completely random that I'm going to bring it up, but it's a Western from 1969 called More Dead Than Alive. Are you familiar with this movie?
No.
Okay. I had literally never heard of it. And maybe right now you're sitting at home thinking that I lead a sheltered life. And maybe I do. I was at the used DVD store. We used to call it the used CD store, but I don't think you can call it that anymore because it has like one stack of CDs.
Yeah.
A lot of video games, but now they have a lot of movies. And I was looking...
They're all Kula Shaker CDs.
Yeah, right. And their movies were almost always bad. Like I would look through the used Blu-rays and it was just like, boy, you have a lot of Underworld sequels. Well, for whatever reason. And when I walked in, the guy who doesn't know me, but like in that moment seemed to know me because he said, we got a lot of cool stuff right now. It all comes from one guy. And man, it was like Scream Factory, Blue Underground, Olive, Kino Lorber, like all these kind of smaller labels, all these cool Grindhouse releasing, like all these cool titles. And they were 20% off, whatever. So I'm looking through finding all this stuff. I don't have the money to buy whatever. But I find this Western put out by Kino Lorber called More Dead Than Alive. Mm-hmm. And I look at the cover and it's got Vincent Price and Anne Francis. And I'm like, sold. Just for those two alone.
Yeah.
So I bring it home and they're both just supporting players, and Anne Francis is fine and good, but she's not in like Forbidden Planet Honey West mode. She's in like she was giving off a different vibe. Mm-hmm. Clint Walker is actually the lead. He is kind of an ex-con who is trying to put his past behind him and find work and not let people know about the things he's done in the past or whatever. Vincent Price is like the leader of this traveling sideshow who keeps trying to get Clint Walker to join up because he knows who he is. Anne Francis is like an artist who sees that he has a heart of gold. It's awesome.
That sounds good.
I loved it. Yeah. I was like, I had no idea that this movie existed, and I really... really liked it. So if you're not familiar with that movie, check it out. It's called More Dead Than Alive.
Yeah, I'll definitely look for that one. So what? Who released the DVD of it?
Kino Lorber.
Okay. All right.
So it was like an MGM title. You know, they get a bunch of those. But yeah, check it out. It's really good. It's really good.
Yeah. Was Vincent Price in like more than one Western?
I don't know that he was in a ton of Westerns.
Yeah, because you never know. Like, sometimes those guys just end up in, like, you know, some weird genre that's out of place for them. But I feel like he was in, like, one or two other Westerns, but I can't think of what they are.
Yeah.
I don't know. Doesn't matter.
Anyway, so check that out. So let's talk holiday movies.
Yeah, holidays.
Seems appropriate for as we go into December. Now, you, sir, are a big fan of the Christmas movie, yes?
Yes, I'm a big fan of the good Christmas movie, and I'm a huge fan of the bad Christmas movies.
It turns out I'm, like, not... and now I'm not anti-Christmas movie because I can always watch one. Mm-hmm. Like, I can watch a Deck the Halls. Like, I don't care that it's shitty. I can't watch, like, the Hallmark Channel, Lifetime,
yeah,
like,
Dean
Cain. Like, I'm not going to watch that.
Yeah, like, Rob Lowe's The Christmas Shoes. Like, you're
no,
not going to watch
that. I won't
that.
Be watching that.
Yeah.
But, I guess the Christmas hook is enough to get me through The Family Stone or, you know, whatever.
Oh, God, The Family Stone. Hold on, that actually might be my kryptonite when it comes to Christmas movies. The overdramatic.
Yeah.
Like, the Christmas drama is the thing that I can't handle. Like, a bad Christmas drama I can't handle. Bad Christmas comedy I'll watch all day long. But, like, I tried to see Love the Coopers, like, a week ago. Oof. and I made it halfway through, and it was at one of those...
I couldn't do it.
It was at one of those, like, dine-in theaters.
Okay.
And I got, like, an order of mozzarella sticks and a Coke, which probably cost, like, $10. And then, like, I had, like, a 20. And I was just like, I really want to leave. Do I wait for the change, or do I just give them the 20? So I gave some kid, like, an 80% tip.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I needed to get the fuck out of Love the Coopers.
All right, then.
Yeah.
So it's number five on your list?
Yeah, it is. Okay. It's number four, actually. But, you know, it's whatever.
So I will let you go first. We're just going to talk about five of our favorites.
Yes. Yeah. So this one, I kind of knew already what one of yours was going to be.
Of course.
Because you tipped your hand, and it was something I knew that you loved. So,
well,
I'm going to go with... one that I'm pretty sure you won't have on your list, which is Die Hard 2.
I really love Die Hard 2.
Yeah.
But you're correct. It's not on my list.
Okay. So Die Hard 2 is something where... Is it as good as Die Hard? No.
No.
Because I'm sane. I understand this is not as good as Die Hard 2.
Nothing is.
The only people who thought it was better than Die Hard 2 were Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert, who were...
That's right. They
eating
gave...
Laffy Taffy at the time or something, because that is the craziest thing that I've heard since the Dino Pussy theme.
Dino Pussy!
He came out of an egg! So, and all it was a vagina. So Die Hard 2 is, I think, it's in that weird bubble of, like, really, really good Rennie Harlan movies.
Yeah.
Like that, and I really like The Long Kiss Goodnight, which could be on this holiday list in a certain way.
You could really just do a category called Shane Black.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Except then you'd have to include Iron Man 3, which I cannot do. I will not do.
But yeah, Long Kiss Goodnight, Lethal Weapon,
Kiss Kiss Bang Bang,
Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is so great.
Yeah,
love that movie.
Yeah. So Die Hard 2 is something that I don't know. It's funny because I've always just really liked it more, I think, than a lot of other people do. Because that movie gets shit on a lot.
Yeah, I was surprised to learn that most people don't like it. And almost everyone considers Die Hard with a Vengeance the second best Die Hard movie.
It's usually people who are just like, well, it's good because Sam Jackson's in it. Like,
that's
those
the
are the
problem
types of
with Die Hard. Well, that's not a problem with Die Hard with a Vengeance. I'm not a big Die Hard with a Vengeance fan. I like Die Hard 2 a lot.
Yeah, yeah. So Die Hard 2 is good, but, like, it's just weird because people seem to lump it into, you know how, like, it seemed to be more of a case in the 80s where the sequel was always, like, just milking whatever cash they could off of the original, and they put, like, very little thought or originality. So people were thinking that it was, like, oh, it's like Ghostbusters 2. It's like Die Hard 2 is like that, but it's not. It's like a really solid action movie, and I think the thing that I like about it is the roster of villains is so big, and it just expands and expands. And I think the twist with John Amos and the Marines at the end of the movie is really surprising and good, and it just kind of ups the ante that much more. I like the Bruce Willis performance. I feel like he's so perfectly suited for that role, and he's, like, really comfortable, and it's just in that role, it's like watching Harrison Ford do Han Solo or do Indiana Jones. I mean, like, he's just so effortless to watch playing that guy.
And it's, I think, the happiest John McClane.
Yeah.
Maybe because...
Yeah, he's not drunk or, like, divorced.
Right.
Like
his marriage is back on track. He's trying to get back to his wife and protect her. You know, like, he's kind of the most upbeat John McClane.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people have a problem with the plausibility, which the movie rather clumsily addresses with the line, "How does the same shit happen to the same guy twice?"
Yeah.
And yes, it's ridiculous, you know.
But
let's accept the premise and move on from there. And you're right. I think it's a really terrific action movie.
It's got that really cool shot of the ejector seat where it goes all the way up to the top of the frame.
Yeah.
And then it goes back down. I love that.
That's one of my less favorite shots.
Really?
The
they did that 5 years before GoldenEye.
Sure. The reason that I don't let... Well, I mean, Die Hard has that moment, yeah, too, right? Where he swings down on the fire hose. Like,
you don't...
To me, the...
You have to like that moment.
I love it. Yeah, no, the ejector seat skirts closer to, like, him jumping on the wing of the airplane in part four, Live Free or Die Hard.
Yeah.
Then I would like it, too. You know what I mean? It's, like, just... Mm-hmm. A little too far outside of reality. Not as bad as the jumping around on the airplane wing, but it doesn't ruin the movie for me at all.
Yeah. So Die Hard 2 is just something where every Christmas I watch Die Hard, but I have to watch Die Hard 2 with it.
Nice.
It's just comes as a double feature for me.
So there's really no point in me holding off on putting Die Hard on my list. It would be my number one, and I think in the email to you I said, like, I don't know what any of mine are except for Die Hard, right? Yep. Because Die Hard, I think, is the only true movie that I have to watch every year in December. Mm-hmm. And I watch it not in December as well, mm-hmm, but like, hey, it's going to be Christmas, I have to watch Die Hard. It is still the greatest action movie of all time,
yep,
I think. And I love it.
Mm-hmm.
What else is there to say?
None. I mean, like, I'm just at the point when I watch it, I just look for the little Easter eggs, like the little things, like little character beats that they have for Argyle. Right. I mean, like, that's where I'm at now. I mean, like, it's just such a effortlessly watchable movie. One question for you.
What up?
The terrorist who is sitting at the front desk.
Huey Lewis?
Thank you.
Got it.
Okay. All right. I'm glad that we can move on.
Oh, yeah. But,
yeah.
All right. What's next? Yeah. I mean, I could expound on Die Hard, but like it's Die Hard.
It is.
Like, I don't like birthday cake. Fuck you. Like, what, you know, it's Die Hard.
All right. If you don't like birthday cake, I got a trick.
What up?
All right. If you don't like birthday cake, it's probably because you don't like cold cake or like room temperature cake. Put that shit in the microwave for like 10 seconds.
Warm cake?
Warm cake is the bomb.
I don't think I like warm cake.
Okay. Well, maybe.
Unless my dick is in it?
Oh, okay. That's cool.
This took a turn.
Dino pussy.
What is next on your list?
Gynosaurus.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like it.
All right. So next on my list is... I'm not going in any particular order, so
no,
I'll just go straight to my number one then, which would be It's a Wonderful Life
from
1946, I believe. Frank Capra directed, Jimmy Stewart, and Donna Reed. Donna Reed is a fox in that movie.
Yes,
oh, my goodness. I don't understand what took Jimmy Stewart so long to get his head in order because he almost lost her to Hee-Haw. I mean, oh, my God. Donna Reed? Hello.
Yeah, yeah. She's something.
Yeah, she is something. I mean... It makes me cry every time I see it. It's just, I think a movie that's got a lot of sentimentality and like melodrama to it, but it earns it in a way. I don't know how to really describe it. Like by the time
like Private Ryan earns it.
No, it doesn't earn it.
Oh, all right.
He doesn't earn it.
He doesn't. But he has a good life. Have I had a good life?
He should have found like a cooler windbreaker to wear. I don't know. Anyway.
The best part of Have I Had a Good Life is his wife's response, which is something along the lines of, what? Anyway.
She's like, Old Country Buffet opens at 4 for dinner. At 4.
Anyway.
Yeah, so it's a Wonderful Life is a movie that I watch every year with my mom. I watch it. They do a double feature of that and White Christmas at the Music Box. For a number of years, we would go see them both, but then there was too much caroling, so we decided because they do caroling in between every movie. So if you get there before It's a Wonderful Life, you hear the same songs that you would hear.
Between
the two movies before White Christmas starts. So now we just kind of watch it at home, but it's, like I was saying, like it's a type of movie where by the time you get to the end, it's weird because it's so obviously trying to basically get you emotional and make you cry, but like it always surprises me like what gets me going at the end of that movie. And it's just because it's always the line that his brother says where it's like to George Bailey, the luckiest man in town, where it's just like, oh yeah, you should be you need to think about all the things that are good in your life and that you should be thankful for. It's the whole Thanksgiving thing. Because we spend so much time thinking about what's bothering us and thinking about how do I fix this and how do I fix that. And more or less, it's always the adage. It's like, it's easier to do something than it is to like avoid doing something. So it's that kind of thing. And, I don't know. I just really like, I've noticed in the, over the years, whether it's like, something like The Best Man's Holiday, which is another holiday movie I like, or This Christmas.
What's This Christmas?
This Christmas has like Delroy Lindo and Loretta Devine and Chris Brown and Idris Elba.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It came out like around the same time as like The Perfect Holiday with Morris Chestnut and stuff like that.
What's the one with Alfred Molina?
Nothing Like the Holidays.
There we go.
Yeah, that one's pretty good too. It took me a couple tries to like get into that one, but That one's where they're just like, uh-oh, Alfred Molina has cancer, and it's just like, I don't need that in my life.
They family stoned that shit?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. I don't love them Coopers. so I don't really have much more else to say about It's a Wonderful Life, but it's like the quintessential Jimmy Stewart role. I mean,
sure.
It's like pure Americana. It's great. It's Bedford Falls is my joke for like when people say, oh, where do you live? And I'm like, Arlington Heights. It's a lot like Bedford Falls. So, no, it's, yeah, I just love it. So, I mean, like it was a movie that was in the running for one of my five favorite movies. But it didn't quite make the cut because I needed to have Silver Linings Playbook in there, which it's weird. Ever since those words came out of my mouth, I felt like so guilty about it.
I couldn't add this one because I had to include my number one.
Yeah. So that was it. I know you kind of came to It's a Wonderful Life later. Like you didn't watch it for the first time.
It was like within the last few years. Yeah. Yeah, I'm just not super well versed in it. Like, I'd always seen parts of it because I grew up, you know, when it was in the public domain. So it was on TV 100 times a month. And then NBC kind of snatched it up and then they would only show it once a year. So then I was less exposed to it. Mm-hmm. I know that it's Doug's favorite movie of all time. And I just saw it a few years ago. I liked it a lot. I mean, I love Jimmy Stewart. I think at the time I was mostly surprised at kind of how dark it was, you know, at times. Mm-hmm. Maybe just because of the title and the reputation for being kind of schmaltzy or whatever, I was surprised.
Yeah,
that like,
uplift
oh, this
is all like in the last like 10 minutes.
It really is.
So. Yeah.
It's like the passion of George Bailey. And then in the last 10 minutes, they're like, okay, yeah, no, everything's good. It is a wonderful life.
Well, that's the whole like A Christmas Carol thing, really kind of, right?
Yeah, but A Christmas Carol, he's a piece of shit, so you don't mind seeing him kind of put through the ringer, you know?
Yeah.
George Bailey, you're like, you love George Bailey, and you don't want to see his life be so terrible for so much of the running time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I liked it a lot. It was great, you know? Sweet. I'm glad that you picked it, because it obviously should be represented on one of these lists, and it's not on mine. I'll go with another, again, fairly obvious pick, and that's Gremlins.
Okay.
Because you had mentioned Bedford Falls, and of course the town in Gremlins is Kingston Falls, because they're kind of not making fun of, I mean, there's a little bit of that.
It's okay.
But he's not making fun of it. But he's definitely playing on this idea of kind of Frank Capra, Americana.
Yeah.
And then like what would happen if you introduced the Looney Tunes into that, you know, and so people are not equipped to deal with it. Mm. Some fun Christmas imagery. I love the snow. It feels very fake because the whole movie has a backlot feel to it, which I like, and I don't think that's a mistake. Again, maybe it's just that I don't love like completely straightforward holiday movies or Christmas movies. I mean, I've seen The Christmas Story a bunch of times. Mm-hmm. I like it. It's not on my list. You know what I mean? Like,
it's not on my list either. I do like it. But
it's good, yeah, right? And when I was a kid, it was like, it was one of those movies where I turned on knowing nothing about it, didn't recognize the actors, and I was just like, what is this movie? This is insane. Like the Santa pushing him down the slide, and it's like this crazy imagery. And so as a kid, I watched it like a lot. Gremlins, I like, you know, because it takes sort of that traditional Christmas movie and then turns it into kind of a horror comedy. You know, it's like there's more of a way in for me. Again, not a unique choice. I think if you were to Google like best Christmas movies or like best alternative Christmas movies or something, like Gremlins and Die Hard are going to show up on every list.
Nothing like The Holidays.
And also Nothing Like The Holidays. Yeah. And it's Joe Dante, and I love Joe Dante. Mm-hmm. And I didn't choose it for this reason, but I'll get in a plug now for anybody who's listening. If you live in or near the Chicago area on December 8th, at the Elk Grove Cinema in Elk Grove Village, Illinois, I will be hosting a screening of Gremlins, apparently one of my five favorite holiday movies.
There you go.
And doing a little Q&A thing afterwards. It's $5. It's at 7 o'clock. You should go. It would be nice to meet some F This Movie peeps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
And I've never seen it on the big screen, so I'm excited.
I can't remember if I have or not. I think I have.
Yeah.
Like at a midnight show or something. But I'm looking forward to seeing it again because I recently saw Gremlins 2.
That's right.
At the massacre. And I enjoyed Gremlins 2 more than I remember enjoying it. Which
it's pretty great.
I used to like it a lot, but like this was the time where I was just like, no, I love Gremlins 2.
Yeah.
So I'm curious if I'll get that, if I have a different opinion about the first Gremlins than I usually do. Because the first Gremlins I really like, but it's not one of my favorite Joe Dante movies.
I don't think it's one of mine either.
Yeah, it's something that I enjoy, but it's weird because... where do you fall on Gizmo? Are you a Gizmo fan?
No, I like Stripe better.
Okay, I like Gizmo.
Okay.
So, like, seeing Gizmo get put through the ringer always, sure. Like...
The Passion of the Mogwai. Like,
whoa. Jeez, yeah. Man. That's pretty good.
Well, we're seeing a theme going through each of these, because we have The Passion of John McClane, not once but twice.
Yes.
And then...
Passion of George Bailey.
The Passion of George Bailey and The Passion of the Mogwai.
Yeah, and Prisoner is The Passion of Paul Dano. Gremlins.
Yeah. I'm real original, everyone.
All right, so I feel like we should take a break for our Jewish audience.
Okay.
And this is a special message from the Bear Jew.
All right. I like that you can hear the
winding
animatronics,
gears.
Right? Yeah.
If you listen to this through to the end, you are Jewish.
Is that how it works?
Yeah. So.
I'm already Jewish because I got the dreidel. So.
You did. There's several ways to become Jewish. If Adam Riske walks around you 7 times, you are Jewish. If you make love to me, you are Jewish. Okay, so there's no Hanukkah movies. Except for 8 Crazy Nights. And that movie fucking sucks and will not be on my holiday list.
Have I ever mocked my wonderful wife for crying during 8 Crazy Nights?
Yeah.
On the podcast,
yeah,
I have.
You totally have.
Okay, good.
Yeah, so...
Because I will never let that go.
Yeah, that's why I remember like a few years ago I wrote a column about like 10 Hanukkah movies that I would like to see.
Right.
And there's so much... I mean, I guess there wouldn't be an audience for it and that's why they don't make them. But... Just roll the dice once. One thing that kind of is weird is, okay, the night before is fine. It's an okay movie.
Yeah.
But Seth Rogen and Joseph Gordon-Levitt are Jewish. Why don't they make a Hanukkah movie?
Right.
I don't get it.
I don't either.
All right.
Anyway. Hashtag war on Hanukkah.
Oh, God. All right. Okay, so next on my list is... all right, so I'm not going to pick A Christmas Story. I am going to pick another Bob Clark Christmas movie.
Oh, that's fine.
Are you going to pick, is that on your list too?
Yeah, but that's fine.
I got other ones.
Why? Oh. We can double up.
All right.
Whatever.
Okay, all right, so it's Black Christmas.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Porky's. No, I'm just kidding. I thought you were going to say Loose Cannons.
Was that Bob Clark?
You know it was.
Oh, my God. Oh, geez.
What were you going with?
Children shouldn't play with dead things. Yeah, yeah. Loose Cannons. That was one of those movies where, like, I saw a poster for it, but I was too young to see Loose Cannons. But, like, Dan Aykroyd was making a face, and I was little, and I was just like, that looks funny.
When I was little, I was dying to see Dr. Detroit.
Who was in Dr. Detroit again?
Dan Aykroyd.
Oh, okay.
And I thought he looked funny, but I think I also knew that Donna Dixon was in it. And I had a big crush on Donna Dixon because I loved watching Bosom Buddies because I wanted to be Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
So this is where my life is at. Christmas.
Black Christmas.
It's the bomb.
It is. It's like one of my favorite horror movies.
It's super good.
It's super, super good. It's something that I didn't come across until maybe like 5 years ago or
so. Yeah, it was recent for me as well.
Yeah. It's super scary, and like I don't get scared during movies that often, but the prank caller, the slasher in Black Christmas is so threatening and weird and creepy, and the things that he says on the phone are just so like what I would picture a caller who does that kind of thing to do. Because it's not like the scream guy where kind of like articulate making sense and everything. Like this guy is just nuts, and that makes it so much more frightening. And
plus you get to hear Olivia Hussey constantly go hello. Hello.
Olivia Hussey is adorable.
Hello. Hello. She is, although I just rewatched Turkey Shoot and she's openly miserable in that movie.
Oh, is she?
Everyone's openly miserable on that movie.
Yeah. That was one of your off the shelves, right?
Turkey Shoot. It might have been. No, it wasn't.
Oh, I thought it was one of the things that you wrote up. Anyways, so Black Christmas is, I don't know. I mean, like, I guess it's the slasher before Halloween, so it's kind of like the first slasher movie, maybe?
Sort of.
If you don't count Psycho. But who counts Psycho? I don't count Psycho. It's not a holiday movie.
I wouldn't consider it a slasher movie.
Yeah, that's true. So, but, I haven't seen it in a long time, so I'm having trouble talking about it, actually.
No,
but
it's really good.
I really like Bright Christmas.
It's one of those things, you know, where you respond to different things in different movies. That sounded stupid. But, like, in Black Christmas, one of the things that I'm responding to in terms of it being kind of a favorite holiday movie, because the movie's only sort of tangentially related to Christmas, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like something like, you know, Silent Night, Deadly. There's a ton of Christmas horror movies. Mm. Black Christmas being hands down the best. But they didn't like sit down and say, okay, whatever bunch of like Christmas themed murders we could have, you know?
There's one that freaks me out. It's like where the girl is kind of wrapped.
Yeah.
That's not really a Christmas theme.
Because that's just suffocating through plastic. Yeah, it's not like he puts gift wrap on her face.
But that image, it makes me...
Oh, yeah.
It
no,
it's gives like me the skeevies.
The most iconic image from the movie. But what it gets right is how cold it feels outside.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that you're totally sequestered in this house because it has such great kind of cold December atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons why, in addition to being a great horror movie, I would consider it also a great holiday movie. You know?
Did you ever see the trailer for Black Christmas?
I don't know if I have.
Even the trailer is scary.
Really?
It's like 4 minutes long. It's just really long and drawn out. And like the guy who does the voiceover is like this really creepy voice. And then the tagline is great because it's like, if Black Christmas doesn't make your skin crawl, then your skin's on too tight. And I'm just like, bravo.
You're the problem, asshole.
Did you see the remake of Black Christmas?
I did. That's what I was going to ask you. Yeah. I don't remember it. I might have even seen the remake before I saw the original.
Yeah.
I remember not loving it.
I remember not liking it at all.
But I keep hearing from people that it's actually really good. And this happens to every horror movie. A couple years go by, and all of a sudden it's reassessed, and now it's like House of Wax is really good.
I feel like that was one of those movies like Halloween, the Rob Zombie one, where there's multiple versions of it, of Black Christmas. Because
maybe.
I remember I saw one version of it that was like almost incoherent. Like, it didn't make any sense at all. Like, even for
I feel like
a horror movie.
I think that's the movie.
And then I thought I saw another version of it where they explained a little bit more, or they kind of went into the backstory of the killer a little bit more. So I don't know. Maybe they were deleted scenes. I could be kind of melding the two together in my brain. But I don't know. I mean, like, the fact that people are kind of championing it makes me want to rewatch it.
Yeah, me too.
Maybe I'll do like a double feature of the old one and the new one.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like where your head's at.
Yeah.
So Black Christmas would be what, third on my list.
Okay.
So I'll throw out The Ice Harvest.
Yes.
Which is a Harold Ramis joint from,
2010
years ago?
Five.
Yeah, right? Yeah. That would be my guess, 2005.
Yeah.
And it's a Harold Ramis movie, unlike almost any other Harold Ramis movie. It's a very kind of darkly comic film noir. John Cusack is really good, just kind of doing John Cusack. Billy Bob Thornton is appropriately
slimy
and loathsome. Honestly, one of the biggest issues I have with the movie is Connie Nielsen, who's like a fine actress.
Yeah,
but
she's the femme fatale signifier. She's, because it's like a Christmas noir.
Yeah,
type movie.
And she doesn't pop the way you want that character to pop, and also she seems very aware of her, like she's acting in air quotes, like I'm the femme fatale, like okay, we got it. And you know, part of it is that she's made up even to look that way, so that part is a little bit kind of underscored. The movie Secret Weapon, of course, is Oliver Platt, who is hilarious.
I forgot about him.
Awesome.
Yeah,
and
so
gives the
movie
such like a great heart.
Yeah,
because the rest of the movie is so nasty, and that's one of the things that I like about the movie, is that it's mean-spirited in a way that is earned, like Private Ryan, you know? Like, usually when a movie's mean-spirited, I would say that, I would consider that to be a detriment. And here I don't, because I think that's what the movie needs.
It's also hard to play drunk funny. And Oliver Platt does such a good job of doing that in The Ice Harvest, too. But that's another movie where you'd mention, kind of like, it feel like with Black Christmas, it kind of feels cold.
Oh, yeah.
The Ice Harvest is definitely one of those types of movies where everything feels that much more bleak.
Yeah.
And but it's not it's not tough to get through or anything like that.
No.
Or tough to sit through. It's like really entertaining and really, really good. Easy watch.
Super entertaining. Yeah. Really good kind of modern noir. They shot it in Chicago. It's supposed to take place in Kansas. But really, really good, and really took me off guard when I saw it. Because, I mean, I think I was looking forward to it. I liked Harold Ramis. I liked John Cusack. It was shot in Chicago. But I didn't expect to love it as much as I do.
Yeah.
And it's another movie that is very much about Christmas, because it's, you know, there are scenes of them trying to buy gifts for their kids. And but Christmas is just kind of in the background while this film noir takes place. So all of my picks so far seem to be like Christmas is in the background while an action movie takes place. Mm-hmm. Christmas is in the background while a horror movie takes place.
Yeah.
Here it's a film noir. And if you have the DVD, and if you don't, I highly recommend picking it up because this is a great movie. Check out the deleted scenes, because the movie originally had a very different ending. Mm. And it's the ending that you would expect this movie to have, and I'm so glad that they went with something else.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil anything, but I think there are some people who would see this ending and say, well, that's a little too pat, a little too upbeat. And that's one of the things I like about it, because it's actually, that's the surprise ending, not this other thing that they were going to go with.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm actually really glad, because I think, had they gone with the original ending, I would have a much more difficult time loving this movie.
Right.
And in this form, I do not.
Yeah, and I think with the ending as it is, it feels much more like a Harold Ramis authorship type of move. So, yeah. I miss Harold Ramis.
Me too.
Yeah. Okay, next pick?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to go with... This is one of those movies that kind of blurs the lines between me liking it genuinely and liking it ironically, and that would be White Christmas.
I've never seen White Christmas.
Really?
Never.
Okay, that's
I thought for sure you were going to say Reindeer Games, because that's how I feel about Reindeer Games.
No, Reindeer Games is all you, man. That's all yours.
It's not on my list, but like, it's a movie that I genuinely like, but I'm also like, but am I enjoying this? this because it's terrible, or do I just actually like it?
Yeah. So, Turns out, what movie was I talking about? I was talking about Ransom. So, Ransom. did you see that Jimmy Shaker was the villain? Did you see that coming? Did you see
that? I saw Ransom once the day it opened and have never wanted to go back to it.
Oh, God. I remember I saw the trailer for Ransom and I'm just like, I'm taking the day off school. I am not
going Ron to Howard, it. To be fair, yeah. was on a run he was. Back then, right?
Yeah, that was like right after Apollo 13.
Yeah. And Backdraft and The Paper.
Yeah.
I mean, he was knocking them out.
It was before EdTV.
Parenthood.
Yeah.
Before Backdraft. So he was.
Yeah.
He was on a run.
I got
and then he made Ransom, and you're like, wait a second.
Yeah. Now I want to rewatch Ransom. I'm going to watch that on Christmas Eve. So, little known fact about Ransom, the kid in Ransom is Nick Nolte's son.
Get out of town.
I swear to God, it's like Brody Nolte.
Nolte. Yeah,
he's just like, Dad. Thanks for these cigars for Christmas.
You got to pay the ransom, Dad. They're gonna cut off my thumb, Dad.
Three fugitives.
Which I never saw.
Yeah, I never
But I just added it to my Netflix queue.
Oh, did you really?
It's got Martin Short. How could I not?
Well, yeah. So White Christmas is a movie that I enjoyed. I enjoy it genuinely.
Son,
because
get under the bed. They're going to take you. I have a very special set of skills.
Did you see Run All Night yet?
No.
Nick Nolte shows up in that movie just out of nowhere, and he's like not listed in the cast. Or I think it's like one of those movies that those rare movies.
Somebody said his name three times. He showed up.
His name's like not even in the cast. He just shows up. He's just like, you gotta get out of here. Yeah, so White Christmas. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. Yeah, so the only woman hotter than Nick Nolte is Rosemary Clooney. Anyways, so yeah, White Christmas is a movie that, like, it took me a number of times to get into. Like, at
what
first
is the plot of
White?
Like, I know so little about it.
Okay.
So, I know it's based on a song. I mean, I know it's not really.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah. And the song was originally in Holiday Inn.
Yeah.
And then they reused it because it was the hello of 1954. it is about two guys who are in the army or the military, and there's a general played by Dean Jagger, and he is really like just a mensch in Jewish terms. Like, people just love him. He's like a great general. And then he falls upon hard times after he's basically dismissed from the military, and he runs this inn, and Bing Crosby and Danny Kaye are entertainers, and they have the clout to put on a show at this guy's lodge or whatever it is, and be able to kind of like get some money for him and stuff like that. So that I think that's what it is. It's been like 2 years since I've seen it, but like that's kind of the gist of it. So have to like put on this show,
sure,
and then like show the general how much they love him and stuff like that. And that's one of the weird things about it, is there's a song about like where all these army infantrymen like show up to sing a song about how much they love their general. And I'm just like, what the fuck was he doing with these guys? Was he like playing ping pong
like
with them a lot?
Kim Jong-un shit.
A little bit. Yeah, he's really good at basketball. White Christmas I like because of the music. Bing Crosby is super charismatic.
Yeah.
He's, it's just like a fun movie. The dancing in it is great. That's my secret weapon, I think. As far as me liking a musical is just like, if you've got good songs and like dancing sequences, then I'm just like, oh, all right. So
can I ask you a somewhat unrelated question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it just that we watch old movies with a particular set of eyes where I don't know how to phrase this the right way, but like, so last night I'm watching My Man Godfrey and William Powell's in it, and I fucking love William Powell, and
he's
like, I could watch him in anything. And I think about Bing Crosby, or I think about the first time I saw Singin' in the Rain, which I think was the first Gene Kelly movie I'd ever seen. And I was like, oh my God, Gene Kelly is a pimp. Like, Gene Kelly is handsome, can sing, can dance, is hilarious. Dude has it all.
Yeah.
And I sometimes feel like, or even watching Carol Lombard in My Man Godfrey last night, I'm just like, there aren't movie stars like this anymore.
No.
But there are, right? I just can't see it because we're in it now and we're not looking back with that kind of remove.
It could be. I mean, like, they also at the time, they seem to be promoting stars as a very specific kind of thing.
Okay.
Whereas I think stars nowadays are so apt to want to diversify themselves that they're not seen as, like, only the person who can sing or only the person who can dance or only the person who's in action movies.
Right.
Like, so whereas I think back in the day, it was a little bit more like that. They were just like, oh, this is the ingenue. This is the song and dance man. This is, like, the cowboy. So I think that might be a reason. But I agree with you. I mean, like, if what you're kind of getting to is they kind of don't make stars like that anymore.
Basically.
Yeah, then I completely agree with you.
Some of it was just the way the world was. I remember watching To Have and Have Not a couple years ago, and Lauren Bacall is, like, 19. Mm-hmm. And she's more of a woman than any current, you know what I mean? You're just like, wow. And yet she's 19 years old. And some of that is just the way the world was. You grew up much sooner because you had to, because you only lived to 30. So
did you ever, I don't remember the name of the movie, but there's this gangster movie. It's like a gang. It's like
Drop Dead Fred.
No.
I'm sorry.
Clark Gable is a gangster and William Powell is a litigator, like a defense attorney. But it's great.
Okay.
You need to watch it.
I will track it down.
I forgot what name it is, but JB would probably know somebody would know.
Clark Gable is one of those blind spots with me. Clark Gable and Gary Cooper, for whatever reason, those two dudes, I'm just like, eh.
Have you seen It Happen One Night?
Yeah.
Oh, such a good movie.
Yeah.
Such a good movie.
Yeah.
But William Powell, I totally agree with you. He should play Steve Jobs.
He should play everything because he's the best. Anyway.
Yes. So, yeah.
White Christmas.
With White Christmas. There's so much of it that's just so cornpone, though.
Yeah.
It's like you have to laugh at it. It's so corny. Like, they'll just be like, oh, look, it's snowing out the window. Okay. Snow.
Well, that's how musicals are.
I mean, like, it's just... Danny Kaye is so... Danny Kaye is like the... what's the kid's name from Final Girls that I said is so not funny that he's funny?
I know who you're talking about, but I don't know his name.
Okay, that's Danny Kaye.
Okay.
Danny Kaye is not funny at all, but Danny Kaye is so obnoxious. He was like the Robert Wool of the 50s to me. Like, but he can sing and dance, and he's just like...
Just like Robert Wool.
And he's so like eager to
please. Or did you
not
see the musical episode of Arliss?
Oh, God. Oh, Jesus.
One S is a dollar sign.
Yeah. Such a good movie. Their show. They should have made a movie.
I don't think I ever saw a single episode of Arliss.
I saw way too many episodes of Arliss. I don't know why. I wasn't even in the right demographic for it.
No one was.
No, they wasn't. Danny Kaye is obnoxious, but he's obnoxious in like kind of a way that slowly chips away at your armor throughout the movie. And I don't know. Yeah, you should check it out, but like, don't expect to like it the first time. Maybe.
All right.
It's something that I don't know if I like it because I associate it with the experience of seeing it with It's a Wonderful Life so many times. Where especially like, it's this beautiful. They did like VistaVision technology and like the color in it just pops with all the reds and the whites and everything like that. So it's a beautiful looking movie and
I love all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like, so I don't know. I think if you haven't seen White Christmas, it was on Netflix for a while. I'm not sure if it's still on there.
Ooh, I hope it still is.
But yeah, you should check it out. It's pretty good.
All right, I'm totally going to watch it, especially if it's on Netflix.
Yeah.
If it's not, forget it!
No!
I can't be bothered to rent it.
Nuh-uh.
Speaking of William Powell, I guess this is my fifth pick.
Okay.
And that would be The Thin Man.
Mm-hmm.
Which in the last few years has become kind of a December tradition once I realized a couple years ago that, like, oh, wait, this is a Christmas movie. every year I watch it with the intention of getting through all of them, and I usually get through like the first two, and then I have to watch something else, and I never get back to like the baby being born and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But man, I love The Thin Man so much, and I love William Powell and Myrna Loy together so much, to the point where like I even love Libeled Lady. I don't know. Again, it's just great dialogue. The mystery is okay. Like, it's interesting enough, you know. But what gets me through is the relationship between the two of them and the way that they just are constantly sort of teasing one another in this wonderful, loving way. And again, just makes you wish that more movies were like that and less like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, the new one. You know, the 1991 is a classic.
It's
Don't get me wrong.
We've already established that on a show.
100%.
No, The Thin Man's phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's funny because it's like if Gilmore Girls was a movie in the 30s.
Yeah, totally.
It's really, it's totally great. So, like, if you're a fan of, like, Gilmore Girls, like, you should, and you have not seen The Thin Man, what are you doing? You should watch that tonight. That was a movie that I watched in college. It was in my Hollywood course. We had, like, a Hollywood 1 course, which was from the beginning of film to 1950. And, like, we watched that as, like, a double feature with Sunshine, which is, like, a silent movie.
Which I've never seen.
Which is really good.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's Sunrise. I can't remember if it's Sunrise or Sunshine.
But Sunrise is Murnau. It's Sunrise.
Okay.
Right? Because that's Murnau.
Yeah.
Sunshine is Danny Boyle.
Yeah, that's right.
Great fucking movie,
that's
by the
right.
way.
That's right. Yeah, except for the ending.
Except for the ending.
Yeah.
Anything with Mark Strong.
Yeah. Mark Strong.
When
Mark
turns,
Strong.
When it turns into Supernova.
Yes. That was a movie that I watched. It was like in a college class, and I was kind of dreading it because I'm just like, I'd never seen a William Powell movie at the time. But then, like, within 5 minutes, you're just like, this guy is the man.
Yeah,
this guy is the man.
He totally is.
And yeah, I mean, just the way that they pull off all the dialogue, and like, it's like a tangentially related to Christmas movie, but it's so good.
Right.
I mean, like, that's one that I completely forgot about.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that you brought it up. It's such a good movie. One interesting thing about my college course, the professor who was so influential to me that I don't remember his name anymore, but he was good. He had some weird opinions, but one of the things that was really interesting about him was he had 4 fingers on one of his hands. And we were
Hashtag
always wondering.
4 fingers.
Oh my God. My mind is blown. I wasn't even going for that, but this makes me so happy that I'm telling this story now. So, like, 4 fingers was, we could never figure out why he had 4 fingers. And then, like, all these, like, theories came up. And then we asked him, like, why do you have 4 fingers? Like, what happened? So we asked him on the last day of the course, and he's just like, I was fighting a wolf and it took one of my fingers off.
What?
And then it was just like, and like the bell rang, so to speak. And like, we had to leave and everybody was just like, wait, what?
Yeah. That's,
is that like
just
really
raises
what,
more questions.
It's like, really? Is that what happened? Like, where was this wolf? Like, you live in Bloomington, Indiana. Like, where, what happened? How does this take place? Like, what is your background? What is going on? How did you love film while you're sitting with a 4th finger gone, or like a 5th finger gone? I mean, it was crazy. So, like, yeah, that was the story of 4 fingers. So whenever I think of The Thin Man, I think of 4 fingers.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. I do. The Thin Man pulls that move that, like, Fargo pulls, which is it waits a really long time to introduce the protagonists, like the main characters. And then when they show up, you're like, oh, this is the greatest thing ever. Not that like anything before it is bad, but you forget, every time I watch Fargo, I forget that Marge doesn't show up for like a half hour. I mean, it's like a lot of stuff. And then it's like, oh, now it's her movie. But The Thin Man is the shit. And I guess technically wouldn't then another Thin Man also be a Christmas movie? Because I feel like it's like the next day, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it would.
But I won't put it on my list because I don't like it as much as The Thin Man, even if it does have Jimmy Stewart.
Exactly. Exactly.
Any more on your list, or did you get through all yours?
All right. So I have 2 that I could, I'm trying to decide which is number 5 on my list, or which one I would pick, because it would definitely be like the number 5. So I'm going to let you decide which of these 2
I like it.
Should be my 5th pick.
Okay.
Home Alone.
Okay.
Or Love Actually.
Home Alone.
Okay. All right. Home Alone is the one that I have much more history with.
Sure.
Love Actually, I like just because I like romantic comedies.
When's the last time you saw Love Actually?
Maybe like 4 or 5 years ago.
Watch it again.
Okay. It's does not hold up.
I don't think it does. Okay. I really liked it when I saw it.
Yeah.
And I had like low expectations and I was like, actually, this movie is delightful.
Yeah, I thought it was really delightful.
Super pleasant. Had a big crush on that girl that Hugh Grant dates.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Why has she never shown up in anything else?
Yeah.
She was.
Good call.
Yeah. Thought all the stories were cute. Nice mix of like genuine emotion and some silliness. I don't know. The last time I tried to watch it, I was like, this movie doesn't work. It's a very specific brand of Richard Curtis bullshit.
You know what's weird? I used to really be in the bag for Richard Curtis stuff, but then like I rewatched Notting Hill not too long ago, and it didn't really hold up for me as well as I thought it would.
He has some very specific tricks that he falls back on.
Yeah.
That
About Time, like I could see the
I still haven't seen About Time.
I could see the puppetry behind the scenes, so to speak. So
I haven't seen it. I hear it's good, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Nothing against Love Actually. Like, and people love it. It is a beloved movie. And there's a ton of great stuff in it, but I just think it's maybe 50% good and 50% like kind of garbage. Even the things that are like interesting, like the Bill Nighy character is great, and I love where his stuff ends up. And as much as I like Martin Freeman and that girl, like, that story just makes no goddamn sense.
No, I mean, the ones that I respond to the most are the one with Colin Firth and the Hugh Grant, because it's kind of that, it's kind of how I like my love stories, so to speak, where it's...
where one of the characters can't speak English.
That's my move. That's my move. No, it's just like...
Congratulations! You're Jewish!
Yay! I walked around you 7 times.
Oh, I was going for the sex one.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, fair enough. No, but it's like that first rush that you get when you're falling for somebody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like those two stories really capture them really sweetly. I like those a lot.
Emma Thompson's reaction to opening the gift, I mean, is like... super good, and you're like, this almost belongs in a different, far less broad movie, because like, what is it doing in this movie? I don't know, maybe it's better than I'm remembering, but
so Home Alone.
Home Alone, which is by the way also not great, but was very close to being on my list.
Home Alone is a movie that I'm rallying behind, as if Home Alone needed somebody to rally behind it, because I saw a classic cinemas, or not classic cinemas, Cinemark classic series screening of Home Alone, and it fucking died in the theater.
Really?
Yeah, it was like a packed theater. I went in Evanston, and it was like a lot of little kids, so I was thinking, like, I'm like, is this going to be their first time seeing it? I don't know. But like, yeah, no one was like laughing except for me and like my friend who I was there with.
Yeah.
And it was really sad. And I felt like, does it just not translate to 2015? But it totally translates to 2015. Like,
I would think it still would.
I don't think the slapstick stuff is all that funny anymore, but it's because I'm not like 10 years old and I don't find slapstick all that funny anymore. But
when I saw that movie 25 years ago, by the way, because I'm the oldest person alive, that was the funniest thing I'd ever seen. The last half hour of that movie was the funniest thing I'd
ever seen. Same here. Yeah. But no, I really love all the stuff like leading up to that end.
Yeah. 20 minutes. The better stuff now.
Yeah. That's the better stuff now. And, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, like, Macaulay Culkin, as I remember you mentioned it on the show that you and Doug did.
Oh, that's right. We did a show on it.
He's so charming in a way that, like, he doesn't seem to know what he's doing.
Right.
Which is just the perfect way to kind of describe that. And it's so sad that, like, his career could not have, like, extended past, you know, the mid-90s, really. Because he was a really charming kid, and I really like Home Alone from the standpoint of it gets me in the, even though I shouldn't necessarily be in the Christmas mood, it gets me in the Christmas mood more than just like really any other movie. That's one thing that I think a reason why I like holiday movies so much is because I always felt like I was doing a bad thing watching them, because they're all like Christmas movies, okay, and they're not Hanukkah movies.
Right.
So like I felt like I was kind of on the outside looking in a lot of times, where if I was at school and we were singing like Christmas carols and stuff, I'm like, where are the Jew songs to sing? I'm like, I gotta pick up these nickels off the ground while all the other children are singing. I brought this challah bread. Does anybody want some challah bread? Oh, you guys are just eating your chocolate. Okay. That's fine.
I love the idea of you in elementary school as an old Jewish man.
Speaking of old Jewish man, here's Latke Larry. This is the voice of Jerry Stiller, by the way. Have you ever had a latke?
Yeah.
They're so good. Always sour cream, never applesauce.
Yeah. I don't take sour cream. What is going on right now?
He's singing his latke song.
But, like, why does this exist?
Because we have a very little creativity. Now.
So it is a joke.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I honestly was like, was somebody trying to create a new Jewish icon? Because when you presented it, I assumed it was a joke. But then when it started singing, I was like, oh, wait, were they trying to make this a real thing? And then they make the Seinfeld reference, and then I know it's a joke.
Yeah, no, he's not trying to be like the elf on the shelf of,
right,
of Judaism.
Right.
So, no, he should, yeah. I mean, like, they had, what was the guy that John Lovitz played in the SNL skit?
Hanukkah Harry.
Yeah. Hanukkah Harry was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked that.
Yeah. So,
Home Alone is good, and it's not. I had said that Die Hard was like the only movie I watch for sure every December. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure Home Alone is as well. I'm guessing there were some years where I didn't, but although actually I probably did, because every time I used to go to my mom's house to help her put up her tree, that was the tradition that you put on Home Alone and you put up the tree. Yeah. And now that I have a son who loves Home Alone, I watch it 20 times in December. And sometimes not in December, which is always weird. Like, putting on Home Alone in July feels weird.
Yeah.
But he wants to watch it year-round because he likes it a lot.
Have you shown him Home Alone 2 yet?
I have not. I literally just told him the other day, speaking of, like, bullshit Die Hard 2 sequels, where it's like, oh, let's just do the same thing. I mean, Home Alone 2 is that exactly.
Yeah.
I was super excited to go see Home Alone 2 when it came out and could not have been more disappointed by how shitty it was.
Yeah.
So just literally this week, I told him, you know, they made a Home Alone 2, and his eyes went wide. They did? I was like, yeah, he's in New York. It's not as good. I didn't even tell him about Brenda Blethyn, the pigeon lady.
Brenda Fricker, sorry.
So I need to track down a copy of Home Alone 2 just to show him.
I can loan it to you.
Thank you. I've never even seen Home Alone 3.
Yeah, I haven't seen 3 either.
No.
I've got the box set, which I think only has 1 and 2 in there, because they know what's up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really the Kevin McAllister cycle.
Yeah, exactly. It's the Macaulay Culkin cycle to like Alex D. Linz's George Lazenby entry. So
any like runners up for you?
Yeah, I mean, like, I gotta give a shout out to my holy trinity of bad, which is every year for a while I would watch Deck the Halls, Christmas with the Cranks, and Jingle All the Way, usually while drinking, but I don't drink as much anymore, so I don't do that as much as I used to, but I used to really just enjoy the shit out of those movies. Like, Christmas with the Cranks in particular is like this bizarre universe where, like, if you're not super super into Christmas, then you are just like the Antichrist.
You're like a total crank.
Yeah, exactly.
I've never seen it.
Okay.
Just added it to my Netflix queue because it's on Instant now.
Yes.
So I'm gonna watch the shit out of it, maybe.
Good.
After I watch White Christmas.
Good.
Assuming that's still on there. One of my biggest objections to Christmas with the Cranks, besides not loving Tim Allen,
okay,
Toy Story and Galaxy Quest aside,
okay,
was that how dowdy they made Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah, they really did.
She's like such a fox, and they took all that away from her.
How do you feel about the Santa Claus trilogy? with Tim Allen.
I've never seen one of them.
Really?
Never.
Okay. I'm okay with one and two.
Okay.
Three is hot garbage.
I thought it was weird that, like, they start from the premise that Santa Claus dies, right?
That is, yeah, exactly.
And I think that's what kept me away. Okay. I was like, no, I'm good.
Santa Claus 2 is, like, a really sweet romance between, like, two, like, middle-aged adults, which I find...
Which kids love.
Which, it doesn't work for kids, but, like, when I saw it, I was, like, 20,
yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, this is adorable.
Is it Elizabeth Mitchell?
Yeah, and she's hot in that movie.
Is she in 3 also?
Yeah, but then, like, she's Mrs. Claus by that point, and they got her, like, in, like, Benjamin Franklin wigs and stuff. It's like weird. I don't know.
Is that the one with Martin Short?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that one's really bad. That one's where you can tell that Santa Claus 2 didn't make as much money as Santa Claus 1, so the budget was cut in half.
Oh.
So you could tell, like, Santa Claus 3, they were using, like, sets from, like, a Disney made-for-TV movie
or something.
Got it.
No, so, I've never seen any of them.
But yeah, other good ones. This Christmas is actually really good. Best Man Holiday, I'm a big fan of. I really like Christmas Story, Miracle on 34th Street, either version, but the one from 1947 is phenomenal. It could have easily been on this list, but I just haven't seen it that many times. Other than that, I mean, like, you got Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, I mean, I had my whole Shane Black category.
Yeah.
Although, I don't think I, like, Long Kiss Goodnight, I don't necessarily revisit every mm-hmm. December, but Lethal Weapon or Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, I definitely could.
Yeah, yeah.
Better Off Dead would be on mine.
Okay.
Which I forget is a Christmas movie, but it is.
You know what I saw on Christmas Day
Reindeer
last year? Was I saw Eyes Wide Shut.
And that's a Christmas movie?
That's a Christmas movie.
100%.
And that movie actually has grown on me quite a bit.
It gets better every year.
I'm telling you. It does.
I've been harping on that for a little while.
That might be a future show.
That's one that I feel so intimidated to even try to delve into.
Really?
Yeah, okay. Because it's one of those where I'm like, I know I'm responding to it, but I don't know that I get it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I respond to it on an emotional level, but, like, in terms of what's actually being said, I'm not positive. And part of it is, you know, I've never read Traum Novelle or whatever. So
yeah.
I would feel like I would need to read that to go into the podcast. So okay. Maybe we'll see. Maybe someday. But I'm intimidated at the prospect.
It's all good.
So I would say happy holidays. But gosh, we're going to be back next week. So let's not act like we're not going to talk again until.
Exactly.
Christmas, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Happy holidays ish, I guess. Happy holiday season.
Yeah. Happy holiday season.
Yeah.
I like where your head is at.
Happy Honda days.
Where's Benny Hill Bear?
Oh.
Yeah. Come on now. So anyway, thank you guys very much for listening. You can find us always at fthismovie.net. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at FThisMovie. Like us on Facebook. Email us at FThisMoviePodcast@gmail.com. If you have some of your favorite holiday movies that we didn't mention, write about them in the comments under this show. We love those discussions.
Yeah, Krampus is coming out this week.
Absolutely.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too. And let's talk some more about holiday movies. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Adam.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.